Na těle má jizvy z mučení a znásilňování. V 6 letech byla unesena a prodána na pobavení prominentním pedofilům v Belgii. Dalších 6 let strávila v zajetí. Muž, který ji mučil, byl později odhalen jako Mark Dutroux. V roce 2004 dostal za únos a znásilnění 6 dívek, z nich 4 zabil do životí. Hostem DVTV je Aneke Lukas, která po 30 letech vyrovnávání se s traumatem promluví v Praze na podporu organizace Sociální klinika. Welcome on DVTV.
Thank you.
How can you deal with such trauma?
That's a big question to start with, but I've been dealing with this trauma my entire life. I was rescued. I was lucky to be rescued at age 11. Most girls or boys either don't survive or stay longer, and then things get worse. So 5.5 years was a long time for this level of trauma, but I was privileged to be able to focus on healing. Mm-hmm. I've been invited here by the Social Clinica, which is a place where people can get therapy at sliding scales, which is really important because I was always had to pay full price. So it's difficult for people with a background like mine who often have financial issues along with many others to find therapy.
We will sure get to that. First, your words from TEDx in Klagenfurt.
Yeah.
At times I felt the pain of the world, but after 30 years I came up victorious. What was the hardest part about the coping with the past for you? Did you even find any forgiveness for those people?
Well, yes. Two questions. Coping, the hardest part of coping was that, a few things. It was 20, 30 years ago, no one was really open to hearing anything about this. Even therapists sometimes didn't want to believe me. So it was just very difficult to be trying to heal from something that people didn't even believe existed. And it made it harder for me because it's hard enough to remember things and know that it's real. So that was really difficult. And also my guilt complex, not having self-esteem, just made it very difficult to live. It's very difficult to make your way in the world, to do anything with when you're constantly worrying that you've done something wrong. And the healing then brings the self-esteem and brings a level of understanding, not just for myself and everything that I've been through, but even for the perpetrators. And I've come to a place where I'm so full and rich inside that I really, forgiveness is easy now. It's an option. And I've chosen to forgive or keep forgiving. Not that I don't feel anger and that I don't want to keep working towards ending this kind of abuse, but at the same time, the forgiveness comes from a place of that I understand how deprived a person who does these things really is, who has no access to themselves, who has no sense of anything real.
That must have been a long journey.
Very long, yes, my whole life.
Come to that point.
I'm 56, so it's been a very long journey to hear. And forgiveness is recent. It's more of a recent thing. It's the last stage of healing.
You said that even the therapist didn't believe you. What made them, like how made you for them to do your story real?
Well, I didn't stay with those therapists. I found people who are supportive. But yes, that not being believed is a big part of this kind of abuse because it is so extreme, and it is even part of the way that it continues to happen, that the fact that the abusers can count on people not believing it because it is so extreme.
So your own mother sold you at the age of 6 to a group of pedophiles. What made her? What was the story behind it?
Well, my mother's a very sick person, and you know, there are narcissistic or psychopathic parents, and they have no boundaries, and there's many of those parents. The only thing is that my mother happened to be close to, connected to this network. And that made things that much worse.
And who were those men? Did you recognize their faces from the television or?
Not at the time, but I recognized them later when I was out and I realized that was that man who was there. So the leader of this network was the then Minister of National Defense in Belgium. And he then connected through children with powerful men around the world. So I was trafficked to the United States. I was raped by a Russian. I was raped by another prime minister of a big European country. So it was a worldwide network of world leaders and those who influenced those world leaders.
You don't name their names, actually, but what happened to them? What happened to those people? Were they punished?
No, not at all. You know, as long as this issue is not really out in the open and as long as the general public is going to have a hard time accepting that this is real, that people at the top levels of politics and society are engaging in pedophilia and darker things than that, it's going to be very difficult to bring those people to justice.
Can you maybe share some of the insights from the community? You told me that you were raped and abused multiple times, but can you maybe share some part of the story?
Of my story.
Like what was happening in the community?
You mean in the network?
Yes, in the network, yeah.
So the way I was used mostly, I was young, I was 6 to 11. And so I was raped by about 200 men. And these men were given to me as a very special thing for them. And as they were being groomed into this kind of life of the elite and the top-notch exclusive club, they were actually on their way up. They were making their way up in the system. And by the time they reached me, they had already been compromised with usually girls a little older than me. And then it just gets younger and younger. So people are drunk and then they are given a 15-year-old girl and they're recorded. So then they have material on them. Now they've done something illegal. But then by the time they reached me, I am so young. As such a young child, there's no way that anyone could pretend that this was not a young child. So I always thought they're going to say no. But I didn't understand why they never said no. But it was my job to actually make them feel comfortable because it was their first time. So they were filmed or photographed, and then these would be used for their records. So these people could become good pawns in the political system, would be owned by the people who were in charge of the network, and that could be used and given to others so that they could be put in certain positions and they would do exactly what those who are really in power would tell them to do.
After a couple of years in the network, you were supposed to be killed. How did you survive?
I was rescued by someone who was actually part of the network. This was a gangster. He was young, so maybe he was still a little not quite solidly on his path. But he was moved just right before I was to be killed and then made a deal for my life.
Mm-hmm. And then you...
And then I was let go. Mm-hmm. So this deal eventually cost his life. This is not a world where things are done, good deeds are done and they are rewarded. No, this cost him his life eventually. But I was out. It got me out, this deal. This gangster, then 21 years old, went to work for the politician then in charge.
And I believe that at that time you stayed in the United States, am I right? Or
no, I was in Belgium then.
And then you went to United States.
Yes, this gangster gave me instructions for life, and they included about prostitution, about drugs, about whom I should marry, a very specific profile of whom I should marry. It included moving to New York. So I was given these very specific instructions that really saved me, and I followed them very, very carefully. And of course, it also included never speak about anything that happened, never name any names, or we will find you and kill you. Mm-hmm. So I didn't speak for a very long time.
Yeah, you didn't speak for almost 30 years.
40.
40 years.
Yeah.
So what made you to share the story after such a long time?
The main thing, when the Dutroux case happened, I wasn't ready to speak. And I believed also that perhaps in Belgium this could not be solved. That Belgium is too small and there's too many powerful people involved in the network for this to go anywhere. But what really made me ready to speak was that I overcame my greatest guilt complex, because I knew if I'm going to speak out and I'm not at a certain point, I'm going to be attacked, and then that's going to become some kind of an emotional repetition where I'm going to feel abused again, and then I'm just going to not be well. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to be strong enough to deal with the inevitable attacks.
Mm-hmm. Is it like when you share the story, even on your lectures and even here in Prague, that you relive all those trauma once again? Does it feel like that?
No. I've healed most of my trauma. There's still more. It's not like now I'm done and it's over. But I've healed most of my trauma, so I can speak about it. And even though I can feel things, I'm not reliving my trauma, no. Mm-hmm. Reliving the trauma happens when it's not healed yet. And then it becomes like a reliving of the trauma. And we all do that. You know, we all have some trauma, and we all end up in emotional reliving of trauma situations a lot. So the healing is for everyone, and it's continual.
So about the healing, you started to pursue the journey of spirituality and yoga and therapy. How does all this help you?
All of it combined is the solution. They're all the physical yoga practice has reconnected me with the body, which I was completely disconnected. The meditation practices has given me some distance from these events that I really needed to be able to understand it and to accept what had happened to me. The therapy being the most important to get a real grasp on myself and what happened, and have a person there witnessing with compassion. That was really the most important thing, that there's this safe person who not only believed me but was able to be with me in it.
As we mentioned before, you came to Prague here also to share the story with the Prague audience. Or what is the main purpose? What are you trying to transmit to them?
So yes, I have a dual purpose for sharing my story. The one is that this information needs to go into the world, even though it is difficult, and I understand it's hard to hear. It is also important that we know what is actually happening, so otherwise we'll never be able to make a change. And the other purpose is that I don't just leave you with this horrible reality. I have developed a healing modality that is very friendly to all, for self-acceptance and also for being able to help others heal.
Do you know if your experience maybe helped someone else, even saved their life?
I know that since I've started sharing, my ability to understand someone who's been through anything like this has they've told me that it was really helpful that they felt understood. So to bring someone out of isolation and to offer a reflection with full understanding, that is really what I love to do the most. I feel most useful then.
Annika Lukas, thank you for sharing your story on DVTV.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.